This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Our top story this hour is here in the United States, where Southern California remains on edge after two major earthquakes shook much of the state. Measured at 6.4 on Thursday and 7.1 on Friday, the two quakes were the area's strongest in at least 20 years. The first was centered in the Mojave Desert, the second near the town of Ridgecrest, some 200 kilometers northeast of Los Angeles. Thousands of homes lost power, and there were fires and reports of cracked buildings along with gas line and water main breaks. The state's Office of Emergency Services is on its highest alert level. Mark Ghilarducci heads that office.
We know that there's been quite a bit of damage, and we know that there's been a lot of impact. So we are moving resources from these various agencies and departments that are represented here into staging area to get them as close as possible.
On damages in Ridgecrest.
Structure fires, mostly as a result of gas leaks or gas line breaks. There are gas line breaks throughout the city. There are also reports of water main breaks.
And he addressed himself to injuries. The news there was generally good.
We have not had any reports of fatalities yet, but we do know that there have been injuries. There's been a significant increased number of EMS calls to the 911 centers.
At this hour, aftershocks are still being felt in Southern California, and so there is continuing anxiety. National Guard troops have been activated to help. National Guard General David Baldwin.
That will include about 200 security forces, sustainment troops, which are logistical support, and aviation assets, including helicopters from the Army National Guard and cargo aircraft from California's Air National Guard.
To stay up to date on all the day's news, you're welcome to go online to voanews.com. There is also a VOA News mobile app. This is VOA News. There is a report of a new civilian bloodshed act in Syria, in western Idlib province. A Syrian war monitor says 13 people, including 7 children and 3 women, were killed today in what it called a horrific massacre. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights charges the air assault was carried out by Bashar al-Assad's warplanes and helicopters. The United States next week will consult with the United Nations Nuclear Agency over developments in the Iran crisis. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has granted the U.S. request for a meeting slated for this coming Wednesday. This week, the agency's inspectors confirmed Iran had surpassed the limit for stockpiling low-enriched uranium. And Tehran says it will continue to do so, hoping to force an easing of economic sanctions reimposed after the U.S. pulled out of the 2015 nuclear deal. Tensions have been on the rise and are escalating over a new incident in which authorities in Gibraltar detained a supertanker suspected of violating the embargo against shipping Iranian oil to Syria. I'm Jackie Quinn.
U.S. President Donald Trump says he is considering an executive order to add a question to the 2020 census form, "Are you a U.S. citizen?" That was last part of a U.S. census more than a half century ago. Here's AP's Mark Sherman.
The census is held once every 10 years, and it's used to distribute seats in the House of Representatives among the states, and it's used to distribute hundreds of billions of dollars a year in federal money. The Census Bureau itself has said that adding a citizenship question to the census would have the effect of depressing immigrant participation and also participation of Hispanics.
That was Mark Sherman. The youngest member of Britain's royal family, Archie Mountbatten Windsor, is being christened in a private family ceremony at Windsor Castle. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley reports.
The 2-month-old son of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex will be baptized in a private chapel at the castle by Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, head of the Church of England. He will wear a lace and satin christening gown that was also used for his cousins, Prince George, Princess Charlotte, and Prince Louis. Parents Prince Harry and Meghan have faced criticism for not giving the public a glimpse of the event and declining to reveal the names of Archie's godparents. The couple plans to release official photos of the baptism later. Archie was born on the 6th of May and is 7th in line to the British throne. Zaria Shakili, London.
UN agencies are calling for the release of all refugees and migrants from detention centers in Libya. This comes in the wake of Tuesday's airstrike on a migrant holding center outside Tripoli, when more than 50 people, including 6 children, were killed. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Let us start our civilian government. Let us implement our economic program, the peace and other things, and we will go forward and convince the Sudanese people that we took the right decision to go forward with the negotiations.
Officials say the signing of the agreement between the Sudanese Transitional Military Council and the opposition is scheduled for Tuesday.
Some people are not ready to a fair competition. So we are going to do everything we can to oppose. Even if the government decides to go to the parliament, we will do what we can to denounce this situation. That is what we can say for the time being.
The Ivorian government plans to present a new measure in parliament seeking to name new members of the Independent Electoral Commission.
But just because Nigeria, you have a parliament that is supposed to checkmate him, he made up for 80% of what we call political media points. People who owe their emergency to the president. And so therefore they go to see why the president raised the provisions of our law.
And a major Nigerian opposition umbrella group petitions a high court over President Muhammadu Buhari's appointees. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A leading member of the Sudanese opposition coalition party says the agreement between the Transitional Military Council and opposition groups is scheduled to be signed on Tuesday. Babacar Faisal, who was part of the negotiating team, also says the implementation of the agreement will begin as soon as it is signed. The accord, which was brokered by the African Union and the Ethiopian government, will create a joint military-civilian sovereign council that will run the affairs of the country for a three-year rotation period. For more about the agreement, I reached Babacar Faisal, a leading member of the Sudanese opposition coalition in the capital, Khartoum.
The agreement was concluded in the early hours of Friday between forces of freedom and change and the transitional military council that assumed power after the fall of the former regime. We agreed on the institutions and structures of the transitional authority, including the sovereign council and the executive body, which is the government. We agreed on the members of the transitional of the sovereign council and the powers of the government and the prime minister and the powers of the sovereign council. However, postponed the discussions on the Legislative Council. It will be concluded in a period that should not exceed 3 months. So the agreement now is on the phase of the legal drafting, which should be concluded within 48 hours. So I expect the agreement to be signed on Tuesday.
Some opposition groups are dissatisfied. They want the military council to hand over power to civilian rule because they believe that the transitional military council has always been with President Bashir and it's just like a continuation of the old order. How do you respond to that?
Yes, the major slogan of the revolution and the revolution is to hand over power to a civilian-led authority. And we think that this agreement has achieved that objective because we adopted a parliamentary system of governance, and powers will be all concentrated on the hands of the prime minister and his cabinet. And the sovereign council would only hold symbolic power. So a short answer to our question is yes, we think the agreement has satisfied the major demand of the people on the street, which is to transform power to a civilian government.
After it is signed, when do you expect this agreement to be implemented? How fast or soon will this be implemented?
It should be implemented immediately. Following the signing of the agreement, the Sovereign Council will be established and the Prime Minister will be nominated by the Forces of Freedom and Change, and he will be sworn in in front of the head and the members of the Sovereign Council, and then the Prime Minister will choose his cabinet and immediately will form his government.
What role will the African Union, and for that matter, the international community play in monitoring the progress of the implementation of this agreement?
As you know, the agreement was reached following the mediation of the Ethiopian Prime Minister and the African Union, who co-mediated this agreement, and they will witness the signing of the agreement, and they will follow up with us on the implementation of the agreement. And if there is any complaint from any side of the agreement, it will be logged to the African Union and the Ethiopian government.
As part of the negotiating team that had the negotiation with the Ethiopian government, the African Union, and the Transitional Military Council, are you satisfied with this agreement?
Yes, I can say yes, I'm satisfied, and I will tell you that the revolution is a process, and it's not just a point in time, it's a process, and we think that the implementation of this agreement would open the door wide for reaching the goals of achieving the objectives of, and the slogan of the revolution in freedom, justice, and equality in Sudan and peace. And we think that the situation in Sudan is now going on the right path, and the democratic transformation will take place during the transitional period, and then we'll establish a sustainable democracy in the future.
Supporters of the revolution were happy with the agreement that was announced. What is the message to them here?
Yes, those who were happy, we know that the response of the three were they responded to this agreement. They welcomed it. Everybody was on the street. Of course, there will be always a minority who will have suspicions on the military and their behavior. But we will tell them that let us start our civilian government. Let us implement our economic program, the peace and other things, and we will go forward and convince the Sudanese people that we took the right decision to go forward with the negotiations with our partners in the TMC. And we think that this is the right decision, and the future will tell us we did the right thing.
Babacar Faisal is a leading member of the Sudanese opposition group. He spoke with me from Khartoum. In Ivory Coast, the opposition Ivorian Popular Front, or FPI, says it is regrettable that the government wants to establish an independent electoral commission with new members to administer elections. The FPI says the government should engage with opposition groups to ensure transparency in the process. The remarks came after the government announced it will soon present a motion in parliament to change the composition of the electoral body. The measure, among others, seeks to reduce the membership of the commission from 17 to 15. For more about the opposition to the government's proposal, I read Jean-Gervais Chiide, a prominent member of the opposition FPI.
We are totally opposed to not only the content of this commission, but also the way it has been set up. I mean, the majority of the opposition parties want a real dialogue, a national dialogue over this issue. Why? Because it is the Electoral Commission which is at the basis of the crisis that we have been through since the year 2011. So the Electoral Commission is a big problem in our country. And when we look at the consequences of the war which broke out after the results given by this commission out of delay, and in the headquarters of one candidate, we must pay attention to the way we are setting up a new commission.
The government says that the new commission would inevitably be more balanced, with representatives from the state and ruling coalition taking 5 seats instead of the current half. So they think this will be a more balanced and transparent electoral commission that will administer free, fair, transparent, and credible elections. Why do you deny this?
Well, this is what the government say. They say that as propaganda. The reality is that we know we are in the country here. We know who is who, and we know where they are going to. So when they make the propaganda to as a communication propaganda, but apart from the composition, because the problem is not composition it only, because the commission must be a commission which is in power to make decisions by itself. What we see now is that the commission will make propositions to the government to decide.
So you think the commission will not be independent based on the bill that the government is putting before parliament for adoption?
Yes. We know that the parliament is over-dominated by the government, by the ruling party. We know that. But we know also that it is not a good thing because most of the opposition parties did not participate to the last elections. That is why the government is in the in this position. Why did we not participate to the election? Because of the commission. The commission, which organizes, is not a good one. We know that it will be dominated by the government, and no matter what you do, the issues of the result of the election will be transformed in favor of the government.
What is the opposition coalition, as you have it? What are you going to do about this new bill that the government is trying to push through parliament?
No, the first thing to do is to speak out and loud that we don't agree with this composition and with this commission. First thing. Second thing is we are going to demonstrate. In a democratic situation, when you don't agree, you say it. And the ways are given by the law. The way to say no are given by the law. Public demonstrations, conferences, and as opposition parties, you have the means are given to you by the Constitution to express, to say what you want. Apart from that, we will also appeal to the international community to tell this government that we don't want any war again in Cote d'Ivoire. Everybody is fed up with the crisis. We are sacrificing generations of Ivorians because of disorganization, because some people are not ready to a fair competition. So we are going to do everything we can to oppose. Even if the government decides to go to the parliament, we will do what we can to denounce this situation. That is what we can say for the time being.
Jean-Gervais Tshiyide is a prominent member of the Ivory Coast opposition FPI. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Abidjan. Nigerian opposition umbrella group, the Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, has filed a petition at a high court after accusing President Muhammadu Buhari of violating the constitution. The group says the president's appointees continue to present themselves as officials of the administration, but have yet to be reinstated to their respective positions. Supporters of the ruling party say the action of the CUPP is yet another indication of the group's attempt to score cheap political points. For more about their legal challenge, I reach Ikenga Imo Ugochinyere, spokesman for the CUPP.
Mr. President, 4 years ended in midnight of 20th of May 20. That's why he took a fresh set of office, because he's the one that won the election. Now, for him to start the second term, the people that are working with him need to be appointed, or the ones there need to be reappointed, apart from those that are occupying particular position that have failed. And then they will take fresh votes and then fill their code of conduct form. The constitution was also very clear that nobody should take office without first, you know, filling his code of conduct form. Now, all of a sudden, people that worked with him in the last administration are deep parading as officers of things, signing government documents. These people are nothing but imposters. The president has not appointed them or reappointed them. And because of his level of incompetence and disrespect to lay down procedures that guide our constitutional government, he doesn't see anything wrong in it, because he doesn't even know. He doesn't even know, just like he doesn't know about most of the things that is happening around him.
Are you saying President Muhammadu Buhari, who was recently re-elected by Nigerians, is violating the constitution of Nigeria?
He has already violated the constitution, yes. It's an impeachable offense. Normally, the parliament is supposed to have started in an impeachment proceeding for allowing imposters to discharge functions of the government. And these people have not subscribed to the oath, and neither have they filled their code of conduct form. Why is the president working with people who have violated the code of conduct being asked by not filling a particular form that is required before you take such office, like the AGF,
like the special advisors. And remember, Parliament is supposed to approve the number for him.
You said what he has done now is an impeachable offense. Is the CUPP advocating for his impeachment? And do you see any success in such a move at all?
No, we do not say that. What I'm saying is that you have drawn his attention that this is an impeachable offense. This is gross misconduct. This is the highest level of incompetence and disregard to the provisions of our constitutional governance. And that also that was violated the Code of Conduct Bill Act. But that he has chance to redeem himself, which is issue letter of appointment to this impostor. Announce to the nation that you have either appointed them or removed them. Their term of office has expired as far back as May 28, 2019. They're not supposed to be sitting around government office. He said that yesterday was in the Senate speaking on behalf of the president as a special advisor on National Assembly. And there's no document or correspondence before the public or the Nigerian people that this man has been reappointed.
Obviously, President Muhammad Buhari doesn't have problem with some of his aides whom, as you said, are going around speaking on his behalf, among other duties that they perform. They work at Aso Rock. He doesn't have a problem with it. So why do you have a problem with it, since the Constitution allows the president to hire and fire?
No. It is not about you having a problem with him or you having a problem with them. We are talking about the Republic here that does not belong to the man called Buhari. He asked for vote. People gave him vote to work for the Republic. And the Republic has straight down rules and regulations in the Constitution that say that these people must be appointed. These people should be to hold office after the first term. These people must subscribe to the oath. These people must see their code of conduct form. It is not a favor from him. It is the law that guides the country. And either you run by the law or you give way. You don't see that whenever you work up in the morning, you do whatever you like. I think that you don't owe him anything. He is the one owing him because he was begging for this job. Nobody invited him. He was asking for this job for a period of over 10, 20 years. Desperate, and now they have given him a chance. Ordinary obedience to rules and regulations. Ordinary obedience and conformity to the country, he cannot do. My brother, how do you think this man can cure the economic situation that is working in the country? How do you think this man can solve our security problem? When he does not even know that Section 151 has this class of people like Adesina that has been put on. And he can allow
Imo, what are your chances of getting a favorable ruling at the High Court?
It is very simple. When you drop this for Section 151, sub 3, he said that this appointee shall serve at the pleasure of the president and they shall cease to hold office at the pleasure of the president's term, which is 4 years. So that's because they don't even need much interpretation. Because they ask, are these people still in office at the pleasure of the 4 years term? The answer is yes. Have they been issued the letter of the appointment? The answer is no. Because they send them packing and ask them to refund all the money they have collected from the Republic. But normally the president is supposed to pay dearly for it because he's supposed to be served an impeachment notice for allowing strangers, you know, come and attest to something of the country when they don't have the authorization. But just because Nigeria, you know, you have a parliament that is supposed to checkmate him, being made up of 80% of what we call political elite boys, people who owe their emergency to the president. And so therefore they go to sleep while the president raised the provisions of our law.
Ikenga Imo Ugo Chinyere is the spokesman for Nigerian Opposition Umbrella Group, the CUPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum says it will soon announce weeks of nationwide protests to pressure Dr. Justice Jane Ansah, chairperson for the Malawi Electoral Commission, to step down. The group says Malawians have lost faith and have no confidence in the head of the Electoral Commission to administer credible future elections. But Dr. Justice Ansah rejected the demands for her resignation, saying she will remain in office. For more about the demand for the resignation of the head of the Electoral Commission, I read Gift Trappings, Vice President of the Human Rights Defenders Forum, an organizer of the protest.
The vigil that we had was on 4th to force Jane Ansah to resign as Malawi Electoral Commission Chair. So Malawians were able to blaze the cold weather, to outstand the cold weather, and I want to be sure that Malawians are tired of the Jane Ansah, because these are taxpayers who are saying that we have employed you and you don't want to leave Malawi Electoral Commission, and we want Malawi Electoral Commission to be independent. So we have had 2 days of demonstrations throughout the night, and Guineans up to now have not resigned.
The chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission, Dr. Jessie James, said she is personally all right and leading a normal life and has rejected your resignation demands. What are you going to do about it in spite of your repeated calls and vigils?
For us, I think we're continuing a civil society organization. We're going to announce another event of demonstrations, and this one will be very long. Even if it takes 1 month to do demonstrations, we want to force this woman to resign. So even if we have another election that she can preside over, Malawians cannot trust her. I think for us, the issue is about the independence of the Malawi Electoral Commission. So for us, we expected that the general answer just accept what Malawians are saying. She was employed on trust, and those people who employed her, I think that they should just go, because you cannot run the Malawi Electoral Commission as it's supposed to be. So we want to see an independent Malawi Electoral Commission.
How do you see an independent Malawi Electoral Commission, particularly when the Constitution allows the sitting president, in this case, Professor Peter Atha Mutharika, to choose among those proposed by the Judicial Service Commission?
For us, I think it's neither Professor Peter Mutharika appointing or not. But what we're saying is that we need a reform where we don't need a referee to celebrate with a winning team. Because if you see the behavior of Deborah Jane Amster, you see that she's a DDP supporter. Because after she announced that the party has won, she went and took pictures, she went and celebrated with the DDP party. So it only shows that she's a supporter of the DDP party. So you cannot be a referee at the same time celebrating with a winning team. This is the issue that Malawians have. We want to have a commission that is independent. But for that to happen, we need to reform our laws to make sure that we don't have a president who can appoint commissioners, who can appoint the chairperson of some Malawian commission.
Are you therefore calling for a constitutional amendment?
We are fighting for the independence of the Malawian commission, and we know that both members of the parliament of goodwill will agree with what we are proposing. Unless we have members of the parliament who would want to side with people who are oppressing Malawians, with people who are looting the resources of Malawians, with people who are corrupt. So for us, what we want to see is that Malawi Electoral Commission should be independent. And in fact, we had those bills that were tabled in the parliament, and this is the same government that rejected it.
So where do you go from here? And by chance, do you have in mind anybody that you think could be independent or could bring independence in the administration of the Malawi Electoral Commission to organize credible elections?
For us, it's a very basic issue. I think we'd want to urge the Guinea answer to just resign, because Malawians who employed her, who are the taxpayers, are demanding that she should resign. I don't think even if we have another election tomorrow, Malawians can trust her. I think for us, she should know that this is not her property. Malawians want her just to go because they don't trust her. There's no way you can fix the election result. And for us, what we want to see in future is total overhaul of the whole system.
The government has warned that protesters will be dealt with, including organizers of the protest, because of the ways some properties are being damaged and all that. How do you respond to that?
It's a very basic issue, because for us, we follow the law. And we have always notified the authorities whenever we are announcing the date for demonstration. But what we have seen is that they send their agents, they send their political individuals to destabilize our demonstration. And that is why these are the same people who go around to ramp up and steal on people's property. And for us, we know that it's a DDP party, the government ruling party, that is behind it. In the Blanda yesterday, we tried to organize demonstrations, but the State Assembly refused that. And yet the law just says that we just need to notify those individuals. So the violence that we are seeing is being orchestrated by the government because they would want to taint our image.
Gift Trappens is the vice president of the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Blantyre. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, warns the abysmal living conditions of hundreds of thousands of people displaced by renewed fighting in Ebola-affected Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo poses a serious health hazard. IOM is trying to ease these conditions and is beefing up its Ebola surveillance and disease prevention activities. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
At least 160 people were killed during renewed clashes early last month between Lendu farmers and Hema herders in Ituri province. UN agencies report the violence has displaced hundreds of thousands of people and sent more than 7,500 refugees fleeing for their lives into neighboring Uganda. The International Organization for Migration reports people who have fled the front line of the conflict are living in abysmal conditions that create a fertile ground for the spread of disease, most worryingly, Ebola. The latest World Health Organization figures put the number of Ebola cases at 2,382, including 1,606 deaths. The bulk of these cases and deaths are in conflict-ridden North Kivu province. About 10% are in Ituri. The intercommunal fighting has displaced an estimated 400,000 people. IOM spokesman Joel Billman says his agency manages 12 displacement sites in Ituri's Jugu territory. Thousands of people unable to cram into these overcrowded camps, he says, are sheltering in spontaneous sites.
Poor hygiene conditions and displacement sites severely increase the risk that Ebola, as well as cholera, measles, and acute respiratory diseases will spread. Many of these people are seeking assistance in Ebola-affected Bunia, where the displacement site, officially called General Hospital Site, has received more than 5,000 new internally displaced persons, increasing the site's population to 10,000. Or twice its capacity.
Millman says plans are underway to relocate many of the IDPs to a new improved settlement on land owned by Bunia's Catholic Diocese. He says IOM also is reinforcing its Ebola surveillance and disease prevention activities at Ituri's points of entry at international borders. Measures include hand washing, hygiene promotion, and screening travelers for possible Ebola infections. On June 11th, the first case of Ebola spread across the border from DRC to Uganda. A 5-year-old boy and his grandmother subsequently died from the deadly virus. Millman says IOM is working to reduce disease transmission to new areas and across borders by expanding its preparedness measures to include Uganda, South Sudan, and Burundi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 600,000 people in the Zimbabwean city of Bulawayo went without water over the past week, and the outage looks set to continue. For VOA, Adi Gondo in Bulawayo has more.
The city issued an alert about the water cut on social media on Monday. The town clerk, Christopher Dube, said water supplies would be interrupted beyond the usual 48 schedule to 96 hours citywide. The town clerk said the cut is to allow implementation of the Africa Development Bank-funded project to improve the water supply and sanitation services. Residents, however, were not pleased when they woke on Tuesday to waterless taps and toilets that won't flush. Jessie Moyo, a 40-year-old mother of Free from Waterford, a low-density suburb, slammed the way the water cut was implemented.
It's very inconveniencing what the Bulawayo City Council is doing. You can't announce such a major thing overnight and expect people to take heed and take precautions like filling in containers for the 4 days that the water won't be there.
City officials say the 4-day outage allows for the replacement of broken down infrastructure such as the main distribution board at the Criterion Waterworks. The outage was to have ended Saturday, but the work was not finished on time. The taps remain dry and city officials cannot say when the water will start flowing. Still, residents like Jessie Moyo are irked by what they consider ad hoc management by the local government. She says the system doesn't get routine repair.
And it's actually a healthy hazard. Why do they wait for the Criterion to break down instead of fixing problems is they arise seriously. I think they are taking us for granted.
Outage comes as city residents were already struggling to get water after the region's long drought forced the closure of the Upper Nema Dam and water reservoir. For now, the city's five other dams available for surface water supply. Those dams, however, are also low. Residents are feeling angry and worried about the risk of disease outbreaks, especially in far-flung residential areas of Emganmini and Cowdery Park, which have been long plagued by water problems. Residents in those areas often must queue for water from boreholes scattered in some of the suburbs. Mechanic Tulani Moyo is among them.
Especially the sewage system of Cowdery Park is not doing well because every day there are some pests that are being experienced in the suburb, so we don't understand what's happening. Anytime there might be an outbreak of E. cholera and Brawa, because water is the most essential thing.
The city government imposed what it calls water shedding 2 months ago to cope with shortages. For now, the central business district, mines, and some industrial areas have been spared outages. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
Cameroonian opposition and human rights groups have called for an inclusive dialogue without preconditions between the government and the so-called separatists. The separatists want an independent country after accusing President Paul Biya's government of treating English-speaking residents as second-class citizens. The government recently said it will hold talks with the separatists, but added that demands for independence or separation are non-negotiable. Dr. Ebenezer Kwanga is the leader of the Southern Cameroon's Defense Force. He joins me live in the VOA studios to talk about the way forward to resolve the ongoing crisis in Cameroon. Hello, you, Dr. Ebenezer Kwanga. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Well, so talk to me. There were demands for dialogue without preconditions. Where are we now with dialogue?
We have long passed the period of dialogue. We are talking about negotiations. This is no longer an internal issue. It's not an issue within the realms of La République du Cameroun. It is an issue which concerns the international community with IDPs.
So where are we with negotiations
refugees
now?
Yeah, on the issue of negotiation per se has not yet started.
Right.
But we are on what we call talks on talks, where the mandated mediator is talking to both sides, the non-state actors and the state actors, trying to find a way so that we will be able to understand the process and find the possibility of either saying, yes, we are ready to talk, or no, we are not ready to talk.
So what do you want to see if negotiations, for that matter, were to begin?
The first issue is that both sides should come to the negotiating table with open mind, because this is going to be a comprehensive solution. It's not going to be a one-issue-fix-all. It's supposed to be comprehensive, which means every issue is supposed to be on the table. If we do not have a comprehensive agreement at the end of this negotiated situation, then we'll be going back to square one. It will be a waste of time. And I don't think that us, non-state actors, after losing so many of our people with thousands as refugees and others as internally displaced persons, that we are ready to settle for anything other than a comprehensive agreement that will give us the possibility of managing our own affairs as a state.
But this is the issue where the government has laid down its marker, that the issues of separation or independence for English-speaking Cameroonians, so to speak, or Ambazonia, as some of your people have described it, are non-negotiable.
These guys are a government of La Republic. They do not govern us. They do not govern us, Peter. The reality is that they can say what they want to say. The issue will be discussed on the negotiating table. When the agenda will be agreed, that agenda is going to pave the way for both sides to know exactly what is going to be discussed. That is going to be contentious, because what we have said and what the international community have said is there will be everything on the table. Either there is everything on the table or there will be no negotiation.
So if I may ask you, tentatively, what is the time frame by which an agenda could be agreed upon, by which elements would be on the agenda, and when negotiations could possibly begin officially?
We have reached a state where we are trying at this moment, those of us who are non-state actors, a good number of us have accepted the principles of negotiation. We are trying to bring in our comrades, our nationalists, our fellow brothers and sisters of the other sisters, organizations and movements to come to the table. And we will be looking at the state party to say, you said you want to talk, yet you don't find people who are willing to talk. We are willing to talk. So let them prepare themselves to come to the table. We still need to be to reach the situation where we will be able to look for our negotiators. They look for theirs so that they can begin hammering the agenda for the negotiation. Now, the agenda is going to decide on where the negotiation will take place. And for a time frame, we can't really put a time frame because there could be contentious issues. I can assure you that even the sitting space during the negotiation on the table will be debated. The way people's names will be written on the placards on the negotiation table will be debated. So everything is going to be on the table. All what we want is we all come to the table in good faith because thousands and thousands of people are dying. There are millions of children who have not been able to go to school for more than 2 years, and we will not be able to continue to allow this situation to persist, to go on and on. Why those in La Republique du Cameroun are murdering our people, they are enjoying themselves, their children are going to school. No, we are saying that we want to sit on the table. But make no mistake, we are not going to negotiate with a gun on our heads. We will go to that table as equals with La Republique du Cameroun. We want peace.
But how can a state actor claim that they want to be equal with the government they are going to negotiate with? Remember, your critics are saying that even you are targeting the same people you said you are fighting for. Recently, John Fruindi, who is the leader of the Social Democratic Front, the biggest opposition party in Cameroon, was abducted twice, kidnapped the second time, and he was released with an ultimatum to pull out his lawmakers from the Senate and the House of Representatives. They are saying you are victimizing your own people that you are fighting for.
Peter, there is one thing I want you to know. I condemn strongly, vehemently, those who think that the best way to move forward is to move around kidnapping, not just people like Mr. John Fruindi, to kidnap any other citizen. That is not part of the rules of engagement of a liberation struggle. This is a liberation struggle. We cannot carry ourselves as thugs. We cannot be as bad as those from the Republic of Cameroon who have imbued so much punishment with true hatred on our people. I condemn it. And I am saying that those who are responsible for this, justice is going to catch up with them. This is not the Amber way. This is not why we are fighting. We are fighting to free our homeland. We cannot become terror of our own people. We are supposed to be their protector. That is what we are supposed to be. Now, let me go further to emphasize that. We should not always say that it is Amber, also Amber boys who are responsible, because the state has done one monumental error, which they're going to regret. In the short run, they will benefit. In the long run, they will regret. They have created their own Amber boys. Look, when you give arms to people, and then you give them the green light to go around and commit atrocities and pretend that they are guerrilla fighters, the time will come when you will discover that those very arms will be used against you. That is what the state of La Republique du Cameroun has created. So the whole notion of Amber boys mostly don't have uniforms.
You know, supporters of the government are saying these are just mere allegations. There is no empirical proof to prove that. But let me ask you this. Concerns have been raised about the divisions within the southern Cameroonians or Ambazonians or English-speaking Cameroonians because there are several groups who are claiming to fight for the same cause. These divisions, if power were to be given to you, would you be able to administer credibly and unite the people of Cameroon, English-speaking wise?
That is a very good question, and it's an issue which I want to deal with. And we have said that we will be dealing with this issue when we go to the foundation, the cradle of Pan-Africanism, that is going to Ghana during this period of the return, holding our first Congress of the African People's Liberation Movement. Our policy position is simple. We are saying that the only problem between the varying factions or groups or movements within the Ambazonian struggle is not an issue on whether we want independence or not, whether we want a state of our own or not. It is an issue of individuals and groups that are already implanting themselves into the control of power in the capital, Boya. So the only way we can solve this problem is we will need a transitional period. But before we even move to that transitional period, where I am personally with the APLM asking the international community through the auspices of the United Nations, as they did in East Timor, that we should first get the possibility of having that independence, have an administering authority appointed by the United Nations that will work hand in hand with all the existing groups of the Southern Cameroon to start shaping that new state to avoid a South Sudanese situation. Because the issue among us It's not that we don't want a state of our own, that we don't want to control ourselves. The issue is, I will not want to see a situation where you find more than 150 different tribes locking horns on who is going to be the prime minister or head of government or speaker or whatsoever. So we will need that transitional period as it happened in East Timor. We can equally ask that the United Nations should give a facelift to the state of La République du Cameroun, because we do not want a chaotic La République du Cameroun when we become free. If we become a state, we will need a stable La République du Cameroun in order to help us govern our own affairs. We will not want refugees to leave their own land and cross into our own land while we are a new state. It's going to be another burden. So for that, I can assure you that the negotiated settlement will be the first proof of our preparedness for leadership. If we Ambazonians, the various groups, organizations, and movements, are not ready to take the bull by the horn, to benefit from this position and prove to the rest of the world that we are matured enough to govern ourselves, then we will not have an administering authority for 1 year or 2 years. It could be 5 years. We will have a state, but for 5 years, we might not be able to control it. So now is the time for us to put a marker on the ground, to prove that we can go to the table and act that we are matured enough to govern ourselves, so that the international community can take pride in saying that, no, we did not create a new state. We allow these people to accept themselves to what they were before, but they are not going to become another burden to the international community. And that is not why we are fighting for independence.
Well, we'll continue with this discussion another time. Dr. Ebenezer Kwanga is the head of the Southern Cameroon's Defense Force. He joined me live here in the VOA studios in Washington, D.C. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You hearing Lady JD with Siri Yangu. It will be followed by Wawa featuring Luyana with Ella Ella. And then we top it off with UG featuring Harmonize with Lulu.
Mimi na mawasi. Changamo kwano tumire no mwambi wangoli kwenja gala bitegere. Hello, yenze kwoya gala kwa gala tali kuyombera. Hello, yenze kwoya gala kwa gala tali kuranira. Sagala kolumia, chechi musagala konumia. Kwe manyandi mwelafu, na eno siloko. Katusaba lobo vuyo timo no simba wano tulino kwenkana.
Well, you just heard Silwana from Sheba featuring Carol Nantango. That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Kelvin Fowler, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the mouth of an elderly is without teeth, but never without words of wisdom. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.